This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
At public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the High Yield Cash Account on public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A High Yield Cash Account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This is gonna hurt, maybe a little bit, maybe a lot. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Tuesday, today the 22nd of February. Good as always to have you along, everybody. Tranche is the macroeconomic word of the day today. Sounds a little snooty, I know, but it's really just a fancy way to say slice or part or portion of a whole, especially in matters financial. As in, today the Biden administration announced the first tranche of sanctions against Russia over its invasion of Ukraine. Today we are going to take a couple of tranches of that story, starting with the big picture. Sudeep Reddy is a managing editor at Politico, also one of our Friday regulars. Hey.
Hey, Kai.
All right. So look, President Biden, in his remarks today announcing these sanctions, said, in essence, look, there's going to be a little pain here at home. So I think it's worth pointing out that sanctions cut both ways, right? You can't impose penalties without maybe some blowback.
Yeah, this is what President Biden's trying first, is perhaps sanctions light, to try to send the message to be very targeted at some of the players in Russia that will feel these. And say that, hey, there's going to be more to come. The challenge that the administration has here is that they are trying to have it both ways. They're trying to spare the energy sector in particular from the sanctions. That would be the biggest blowback. If we have an oil crisis right now on top of all the other problems in the world, that is the worst scenario that you can have at this time, short of a full-fledged world war between nuclear powers. So it's just not a good situation, and they know it, but sanctions are the threat that's on the table.
Euler coming up in a minute. Andy Euler coming up in a minute on the energy sector and those sanctions. But look, let me ask you this. To your point of that would be really terrible because of everything else that's going on, context matters, right? We've got supply chain problems globally. There's inflation globally. Consumers, certainly here in the United States, are cranky. And now there's this possibility of some degree of economic pain.
Yeah, the global economy does not need one more thing. We have a lot of one more things that have been piling up, supply chain issues, the virus. Remember that whole pandemic thing we've been going through, inflation troubles everywhere, a world war on top of it, sanctions. All of that just will feed into the risk aversion that you have, particularly from multinational companies, companies that are operating in Europe. This could have deeper effects with China, depending on how they're positioned in all of this. And that's just the combination of risk factors that you don't want to have to deal with. You don't want to deal with high inflation, which of course will lead central banks to have to react more forcefully, which at a time of lower spending already, this is just not the right environment for a series of blows like this right now, because it's just really bad timing.
These are sanctions that the executive branch could put into place. Congress has been talking, I suppose, about sanctions, but nothing more substantive out of Capitol Hill on this, right?
You've had a disagreement over the course of the month on Capitol Hill about what they really want to be. Now that you've had the Russian invasion take this next step, I think you'll see makers come together with something more in the coming weeks. But boy, they were not using that as a deterrent all that much. And Putin probably saw that there wasn't necessarily resolve to go big on sanctions. So he was going to go small with his first step.
Right. Okay, last thing, and I'll let you go because it sort of sounds like your line is deteriorating here. The Federal Reserve, in the minutes of its last meeting, the word inflation came up like 70 or 75 times. The word geopolitics, read Russia, came up 4 times. The Fed is now looking at raising rates into a really unstable global environment and macroeconomic slowing, certainly here and around the planet. What do you make of that?
Yeah, this is the Jay Powell nightmare, right? Right. This is the thing that the Fed chair does not want is the stagflationary. Before it was raising rates into a strong economy. Now you don't want inflation firming, and this is what happens with oil prices ratcheting up month after month. It makes it that much harder for the Fed to go forward, and this is where you get the perfect storm comparisons. If you have all of these things piling up in a single moment, it is a central banker's ultimate nightmare to be trying to deal with them. And ultimately, it just raises the risk that you have to trigger a recession to force all of it to come back down together. And obviously, no policymaker wants to face that as their next choice.
Sudeep Reddy, running things at Politico. Sudeep, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Kai.
Talk to you soon. On Wall Street today, it was really, really bad. And then it was less bad. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Okay, so President Biden was pretty clear today, as Sudeep and I were just talking about, that some of the sanctions he is considering could cause some economic pain here at home, most particularly in energy, because, as the aforementioned Indiula reports, sanctioning Russian energy and keeping the punishment isolated there, it ain't gonna be easy.
For about the past 6 months, the amount of natural gas that Russia's Gazprom has been sending to Europe is actually below what it had been sending for years, despite demand for it. That has Gabriel Collins at Rice University scratching his head.
Gazprom's explanation for this is that they only want to sell long-term contractual volumes and they don't want to sell on the spot market. But I don't think it fully holds water.
Because he says the prices they're able to charge for that gas on the spot market is historically high. So commercially, it just doesn't make sense. But he says, remember, Gazprom is state-owned.
Its operations are 99% commercial, but the other 1% can be a huge problem when you're a customer that finds yourself over a barrel. And I think that's where Europe finds itself at this moment in time.
Politicians in Europe and the U.S. have been reluctant to sanction Russia's oil and gas industry because, while it might cripple the Russian government's purse strings, energy markets are global and will react to disruptions. Maria Snigovaya is a visiting scholar at George Washington University. She says Russia knows this.
So that's part of a deliberate policy, and it's unfortunate that the West sort of did not adjust to that situation until now, where this is definitely used as some sort of leash on which the Kremlin hopes to keep the EU.
It's an obvious use of energy as a political weapon by the Kremlin.
Benjamin Schmidt is a senior fellow at the Center for European Policy Analysis.
And it was meant to undermine the potential for Western responses to exactly what we're seeing now.
And though the sanctions announced by the White House today didn't directly address Russian oil and gas, Biden said that he would ratchet up sanctions if the invasion of Ukraine went further. In Austin, I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
I got some supply chain good news, and then I got some supply chain not so good news, and I think we're going to take it in that order, actually. The supply chain good news is that according to the people that we talked to down at the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach, through which comes, remember, 40% of all the containerized cargo this economy imports, according to them, the number of ships waiting to pull in and unload is down to 77. That's from a high of 109 back in the beginning of January. So, good, right? The not-so-good news is that the goods-based inflation we've been seeing because of that supply chain backlog, the stuff we're all wanting to buy, of which there's not enough, that inflation might soon be replaced by services-based inflation. Marketplace's Justin Ho does the inflation math for us.
There's a small market near San Diego called Alfresco that sells foods and food-related goods.
I've curated like stuff from around the world.
Jennifer Nizgoda is the owner.
We've got olive oils from Portugal and wine from Mexico and a lot of stuff from local makers here.
Alfresco also provides services, events like boutique gatherings at the market, private chef experiences, luxury beach picnics.
We've been able to offer a lot more community style stuff, which is great because, you know, for the last year and a half, we weren't really able to do that.
Nizgoda says the goods she sells have been getting more expensive. But lately, she says it's the services side of Alfresco, the local events, where costs are rising the most. And a big reason is the cost of staffing those events.
Just because I used to pay more around minimum wage, and what we're having to pay now is pretty high. It's way above minimum wage.
It's taken a while for hourly services sector jobs to start coming back, says economist Megan Green, a fellow at the Harvard Kennedy School. Now that they are coming back, companies are competing for labor and wages are going up.
And therefore, the companies operating in those areas are passing on the higher wage costs to the end user in the form of higher prices.
This isn't only happening in the leisure and hospitality industry. Marcia St. Hilaire Finn owns Bright Star Early Care and Preschool, which has three locations in Washington, D.C.
Child care took a hard hit. A lot of people left that industry to go do other things or to just, you know, reevaluate their lives and what they want to do.
St. Hilaire Finn says demand for child care jumped this month, with Omicron fading and people going back to work. But she's only been able to fill about 20% of her open positions, in part because it's hard to find the right people.
We attracted a lot of people, but not all the people want to be in childcare. People are just looking for jobs, but for us, it has to be a passion.
St. Hilaire Finn says to attract workers, she's hiking salaries by 15%. She's also spending more on workplace safety equipment and staff retreats to make people want to come back. And so
we have to raise tuition by 10%, and we had to raise it most recently again by 5% because it's growing faster than we can keep up with the pace.
It's not just wages that are pushing up prices in the services sector. Sherrard Duvall runs a video production company in South Carolina called OTR Media Group. It does video shoots for clients all around the Southeast, and that means he's renting a lot of trucks and minivans to haul his crews and equipment.
And man, the prices of renting vehicles has gone so far up.
So is the cost of hotel rooms. But while the cost of those services are rising, they're a pretty small slice of his budget.
When you look at the overall cost of the production, it's maybe one or two line items on a sheet that might have 30, 40 line items.
And many of those other line items are not getting more expensive. For instance, he says his production budgets for food, gasoline, and even wages have remained pretty constant. As a result, Duvall says he hasn't had to raise his prices all that much so far.
Like, I don't think our clients have the same sticker shock as I did when I looked at those rental car prices, if you get me. You know what I mean?
But if hotel and rental car prices keep going up, Duvall says his will too. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
Coming up,
we are receiving a lot of inventory daily.
Hey, look at that. Too much supply. First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's down 482 today, 1.4%, closed at 33,596. The NASDAQ gave up 166 points. That's almost 1.25% there, 13,381. S&P 500 down 44 points, 1%, 43.4 there. Following up on Andy Euler's piece about what's happening in Ukraine and energy, big petroleum companies lost ground today. BP fell about 0.5%. ExxonMobil dropped almost 1.2%. Bad day for Home Depot. The retailer reported its profit margin shrank during the fourth quarter. So share price shrank as well, down 8.9% today. Bond prices down. Yield on the 10-year T-note up 1.94%. You're listening to Marketplace.
And now a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns. Meaning, when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal. Rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line, and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again. Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out Public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. You know, it's not just the global supply of oil and gas that could be affected by what's happening in Ukraine. Agriculture is huge in Ukraine, and Russia and Ukraine together supply more than a quarter of the world's wheat exports, almost 20% of corn, and 80% of sunflower oil exports. And believe you me, the commodities markets were a tad rattled today. Corn for delivery next month up 3.4%. March wheat up almost 5.5%. Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino has more on that tranche of the story.
Grains are a foundation of the diets of humans and livestock, says Patrick Westhoff at the University of Missouri.
It's a very important staple food around the world. So even a relatively small disruption in supplies can have a large impact on prices.
In the short term, sanctions could result in a lot of already harvested grain staying in Russia, and military actions could disrupt trade routes on the Black Sea. In the long term, an invasion of Ukraine could do a lot of damage to that country's agriculture sector, says Per Hong, a partner at Kearney Consulting.
It really could mean sharp declines in wheat production. A real fall in wheat exports as farmers flee the fighting, infrastructure and equipment are destroyed.
An invasion could be good news for other wheat exporting countries, says Steve Nicholson at Rabobank, including the U.S., the second biggest exporter. Trouble is, the North American wheat crop has been hampered by drought.
So you add this on top of this already food inflation, it just exacerbates the problem.
Rising grain prices could spur instability in countries that rely most heavily on imports from Russia and Ukraine, including Egypt, Turkey, and many countries in North Africa, says Ada Ahmed, founder of Insurgent Business Analytics.
Grains in general, you know, the loaf of bread, its availability, its price are a critical part of food security.
She says rising food prices a decade ago could have played a part in fomenting the Arab Spring. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
¶¶ It's tough to know for us lay people exactly what is in the thousands of containers that are floating around out there on those 77 ships waiting to dock at the ports here in Southern California. Safe bet, though, that buried in some of them is a whole bunch of seasonal merch, clothes in particular, that were supposed to hit retailers at the beginning of the winter. Now what's happening is that apparel wholesalers in particular are getting stuck with clothes that are way out of season. And what are they supposed to do, oh, by the way, with a glut of supply that consumers might no longer want? Marketplace's Lily Jamali has that one.
Most wholesalers are companies you've probably never heard of. They make products for brands you know. In clothing, wholesalers handle most of the back end, says HSBC commercial banker Eric Fish.
They'll work on the actual design, the manufacture, the importing, and then the storing of the product, selling it on to a retailer.
About that last part, selling to a retailer, Fish says since the pandemic started, retailers, the brands you know, have been canceling wholesale orders. For decades, that was really rare.
And so the wholesaler now has a difficult decision to make. Do you sell it off at a very steep discount, or do you hold it waiting for hopefully the retailer to decide that they're going to take it?
Fish says in the past, any clothes that wholesalers couldn't sell would probably have landed on the clearance rack. Now,
they're going to try to hold the line as much as possible as the season progresses to sell goods at the level that they consider full price.
That's harder to do with seasonal stuff. Just ask Ginny Pasqualone, CEO of Sparkle Dots, a kids' clothing wholesaler. In her storage area right now,
there are rows upon rows of really adorable Christmas tresses that we just ended up with too many of.
She's still recovering from this past holiday season when retailers held sales early and shoppers shopped early. Meanwhile, a lot of her inventory came in late. To get it to her customers, she spent big on air freight.
Honestly, the companies knew that they had us by the you-know-what, and they were able to charge whatever they wanted to.
To help make up for it, Pasqualone is keeping her stash of adorable, totally out-of-season holiday dresses in storage until next Christmas.
It's either that or I try to dump it below cost, and the market is flooded with other manufacturers trying to do the same thing.
Still, that's money locked up in inventory that she could invest in her business. And so this doesn't happen again, she's ordering more designs with a longer shelf life.
Because there's no expiration date on unicorns. There's no expiration date on flamingos or on mermaids.
Even now, with the holiday mayhem behind us, wholesalers are scrambling to keep up with ever-rising costs on everything from raw materials to production to transport. Chris Volpe is finding this. He's the chief financial officer of wholesaler United Legwear and Apparel, selling to a wide range of retailers that includes Dollar General and Neiman Marcus.
I mean, usually you lock down your price. It's good for 6 months. You go through your development process. You sample it, you place your production, and you're locked in. We're finding that if we don't place production this week and we place it next week, cost increases could be dramatically different.
But there is a silver lining to that. Generally, Volpe says apparel loses value the longer it sits around, whether it's on a retailer's shelf or in a wholesaler storage unit.
This is the first time in probably 30 years that you have an inflationary impact at retail where apparel products are actually increasing in price.
So waiting to sell that older apparel that cost less to make a year ago at full price might end up saving the wholesalers money.
I hate to say it as a CFO, but it's not necessarily a bad thing that your inventory turn slows because you own the goods at a better value.
Which explains why holding, not rushing to sell, is a gamble Volpe and others are willing to take right now. I'm Lily Jamali for Marketplace.
Despite all the inflation and somewhat droopy consumer confidence, buying by those same consumers is holding strong. Told you last week about retail sales in January, right? Up 3.8%. Data on consumer spending comes out later this week. So we figured in the midst of all those macroeconomic indicators, we would get down to the retail nitty-gritty. Irene Kesselman runs Alicat Toys in Carrboro, North Carolina, whence last we heard there were some supply chain issues to be surmounted.
Our business continues to be strong. Quite frankly, I did not know what it would be like after Christmas, but we had great business in January. We usually have a puzzle sale and people were out and about buying puzzles. We also have stocked up on Easter early this year, so we are already selling everything from Easter bath bombs to bunnies and Easter chocolate. We are receiving a lot of inventory daily, more than I typically would because of several factors this year. One of them is trying to make sure that the goods do come. And secondly, to avoid price increases. Many companies said, if in fact you buy such and such by a certain date, you will avoid a price increase. That's not to say that price increases aren't happening, because they absolutely are. And my staff and myself are looking to see where we need to raise and extend that increase to the customer and also absorb some of the costs. So I am sure that we will start to hear, believe it or not, some people letting us know that we need to order certain things if we would like holiday delivery this year. These days, I think it's particularly apparent to everyone that price increases are taking place across the board. I think people, including myself, are spending a lot of their money in buying for their homes. I personally am looking for a new sofa. The little things that I used to purchase, maybe some makeup, I am not purchasing as much anymore. They seem to be not as important as they once were to me, and I would prefer to spend my money on things that I know are going to last and bring me pleasure.
Irene Kesselman there, running Alicat Toys in Carrboro, North Carolina. This final note on the way out today, another data point on this economy out this morning. Home prices, says the benchmark Case-Shiller Index, up 18.8% nationally in December over a year ago, the biggest jump in almost 35 years. The good news, and bear with me now, but the good news is that the interest rate on 30-year fixed-rate mortgages is at 4.12%. That's as reported by Mortgage News Daily. Higher interest rates mean home prices might, emphasis here on the might, moderate just a little bit. All right, we got to go. Here is your moment of economic context to be filed under the heading Bout Time. $24 million, that is the total pay discrimination settlement between the United States Soccer Federation and dozens of members, past and present, of the umpteen-time champion U.S. Women's National Soccer Team. Contingent on a new collective bargaining agreement, it should be said, but still, about time, right? Our digital and on-demand team includes Carrie Barber, Siobhan Brett, Dylan Mietinen, Janet Wynn, Olga Oxman, Donna Tam, and Tony Wagner. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.